welcome back to Sabah al-Muslim Drive Time on Radio Islam International. Many times we hear people asking the question that it seems like Indian people contract the COVID-19 virus in greater numbers than others, and that there are more deaths in Indian communities. Some would say Muslim communities, but they are referring to those Muslim communities that are predominantly Indian. Is there any scientific explanation for this? Well, joining us on the line now, we have Professor Shabir Mari. Prof, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
Are Indian people, Prof, more vulnerable to contracting COVID-19 and succumbing to COVID-19?
So, Maulana, unfortunately, it appears so. And this is independent of the high prevalence of diabetes, hypertension, obesity, as an example, which are risk factors for developing severe disease. In South Africa, it appears that being Indian, of Indian descent, is associated with about 40% greater risk of actually dying of COVID-19, especially after people are hospitalized. So it seems that Indian ancestry is associated with a high risk. The exact reason for that is probably unclear. Whether or not it's a genetic predisposition remains to be established, but it also might be that people that end up with severe disease and end up passing on are usually infected with a much higher viral load. So they are exposed to much more virus. And that could be possibly due to the sort of social engagement that exists in the Indian community.
So Indians have a double challenge then. On the one hand, just by being Indian, you are at greater risk of contracting and succumbing to the disease. On the other hand, some of the comorbidities are found to be more prevalent in Indian communities, like obesity, diabetes, blood pressure, etc.
Correct. So the contracting of the virus, that is obviously more related to behavior and other sort of issues around the manner in which we engage. But as you correctly point out, being of Indian descent coupled with all of this high prevalence of other illnesses, the diabetes, the obesity, unfortunately, it is somewhat of a double whammy.
Is there research ongoing in this regard globally to try and get to the bottom of it? Is this a trend with Indians beyond South Africa, or only in South Africa?
So I haven't really studied the data from the United Kingdom, but as you probably aware, especially during the course of the second wave and even in the first wave, the Indian community in the United Kingdom appeared to have been disproportionately affected as well. Whether that, again, was because of the high prevalence of comorbidities or whether it was an independent risk factor, I think that analysis I haven't yet seen, but I wouldn't be too surprised, given what we've seen in South Africa, that that might well be the case.
Now, moving on to another issue, Prof, we know there are various preventative measures that one needs to take when it comes to COVID-19, and they become all the more relevant when we're going through the current wave or the third wave, when there's a surge in numbers of infections and deaths. There seems to be a suggestion that from all of these measures, the two most important are masks and ventilation. Do you concur, and tell us why it's so?
Absolutely. So what we've come to learn about this virus over the course of the past 13, 14 months is that more than 80% of all infections are either directly or indirectly related to super spreader events. And these super spreader events usually take place indoors and especially in poorly ventilated areas. Unlike at the start of the pandemic, when we thought, as an example, that a lot of infections is taking place when we touch contaminated surfaces and then infect ourselves, what we now understand is that most of the infections that take place, probably more than 95%, are probably because of airborne transmission. And the virus is able to hang around in poorly ventilated areas for 2 to 3 hours. And it doesn't require you to be next to someone to get infected with that virus. You can just breathe the virus in from the air because the virus is suspended in the air. So if you have adequate ventilation, the airflow basically removes the virus from that vicinity. And obviously the mask, if you are coughing or anything else, is going to reduce the chances that you're going to be spreading the virus into that immediate vicinity. So certainly without any question in my mind, the two most important measures that we can implement to reduce the rate at which the virus spreads is to ensure adequate indoor ventilation, to avoid overcrowding firstly when indoors, adequate ventilation, which means unfortunately even when the weather is cold, the windows need to be kept open if there's going to be more than a few people in that space. And then lastly, the wearing of face masks are absolutely still important because that assists in terms of reducing the chances of someone who might not know that they're infected with the virus, they're asymptomatic, spreading the virus in that particular vicinity and ending up infecting probably up to one-third of people in that same vicinity if there isn't adequate ventilation.
Prof, just yesterday we were talking about the increase in the number of not only infections, but also in the number of deaths. There are many more janazas in our communities these days. Is Gauteng officially in the third wave? And more importantly, have we peaked or are we yet to peak in terms of the third wave in Gauteng?
So the third wave in Gauteng probably started about 3 weeks ago when the percentage positivity, that is the number of people that were being tested, when that positive rate went above 10%. And that is probably a better measure as to whether you're in a wave or not. So that started about 3 weeks ago. Unfortunately, right now, we haven't as yet peaked. And there's actually a rapid increase in number of cases day on day. It's probably going to be another 2 weeks before we actually peak. So as you mentioned, we're probably going to face many more janazah namazes over the course of the next 2 weeks. And then this wave will probably still last another 3 to 4 weeks after that. So probably taking us towards the end of July before this wave really subsides. So we're still in for a tough ride. And all indications are that this wave, the third wave in Gauteng, surprisingly to me, might well be more severe than what you have seen in the first and second turnaround.
And then, Prof, the issue of vaccines, right? We see the rollout is starting to pick up steam in terms of government side. We know there are those that are called anti-vaxxers, those who are historically skeptical of vaccines. Then you have those who are not historically skeptical of vaccines, but they are particularly skeptical of the COVID vaccines. The debate is ongoing in family chats, in community forums, outside masjids, etc. Is there any other long-term sustainable solution to this COVID-19 pandemic other than vaccines?
Absolutely none. Unless you want to live in isolation as a hermit, you're going to continue to be exposed to the virus. The virus is not going away anywhere. It's going to be with us for the rest of our lifetimes. And unfortunately, the only sustainable way that people can have some level of protection, especially against severe disease and death, is by being vaccinated. So whether you get the vaccine tomorrow or whether you wait another 2 years, all that you do is you're increasing your chances of ending up in hospital and dying of COVID if you delay getting the vaccine, and especially if you amongst the high-risk groups, people over the age of 60, people with comorbidities. I would strongly urge that as soon as opportunity arises, that they rush forward to be vaccinated. We are not vaccinating people for any sinister reason. We are vaccinating people to save lives.
What would you say to those who are skeptical still after all of the discussions with regards to vaccines?
Well, I think, to put it bluntly, I think they need to visit the cemeteries and see what's happening in cemeteries. It might not be affecting every family at an individual level, but certainly in my own family, as an example, over the course of the past 8-10 days, there have been 4 members of the family that have passed on because of COVID-19, not because of cancer, not because of a motor vehicle accident, because of COVID-19. So if people really believe that it's normal, as an example in Lanesha, to have had 11 janazah namazes in a single day on Saturday, if you think that is normal and that there isn't something abnormal happening, then I think you need to seriously reflect on what your train of thought is, because that is abnormal. And it's because of COVID-19. This is something that has been unprecedented in our lifetime. And unless we take it seriously, we risk infecting others, even if we're young, and those people passing on because of our behavior if we're young.
Professor Shabir Mahdi, shukran always for the time that you make available to us and for your enlightening answers.
Exactly.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Okay.
That was Professor Shabir Mahdi telling us that Indians are 40% more likely to succumb to COVID-19, possibly because of genetics or something else, it's not really known, and that Indians have a double challenge. On the one hand, just by being Indian, you're more likely to contract and to succumb. The other is then comorbidities are found more prevalent in the Indian communities when it comes to diabetes, obesity, hypertension and those kind of things. And that may answer the question as to why we see so many more deaths in Indian Muslim communities. Then he's also speaking there that the two most important preventative measures are masks and ventilation. Open up the windows. After wearing the mask, that's the most important thing, even if it's cold. The third thing he was highlighting here is the third wave has started in Gauteng, but it's yet to peak. And Allah forbid, but it'll probably be worse than the first two waves. May Allah protect us and make it easy. And towards the end, he was saying that vaccines are the only sustainable long-term solution for COVID-19. So those are the four key points that he brought up in the interview there.